You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 4th, episode 3767. Good morning, Horse World.
Woo!
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
And welcome back, everybody. Mary is here the second Thursday of every month, and we sit down and chit chat about all things horse training, or maybe just training in general. Coming up on today's show, we're going to answer listener questions as usual on a variety of topics. And I also had a sit down with the folks from Kent Feeds. And we talk a little bit about feeding up young competition horses specifically. So that should be an interesting little chat to hear. Welcome back, Mary. How you been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's been, I can't believe it's already been a month.
It goes by with alarming speed, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, you are fixing to head out to another competition with your Mustang Remy, are you not?
I am. As soon as we wrap up here, I'm hitting the road for Hamilton, Texas, which is like 2.5 hours away. And we're doing another Stock Horse of Texas show. So trying to rack up those points, see where we end up at the end of the year.
You picked yourself up another buckle recently with Remy, didn't you?
I did. So there's another stock horse association in Texas called the East Texas Stock Horse Association. And I wasn't even keeping track. And I got told that I was the reserve in the ranch in the cow horse. So yeah, that's his third buckle he's gotten.
Woohoo! Well, no, we're going to use we. Remy does not do this on his own.
Yeah, he definitely would rather just sleep in the pasture in the sunshine if he had his choice. But I pay him well for his work.
See, that's right. He has an excellent salary system right there.
Yes.
There we go. Well, glad to hear things are going well with Remy. Get best of luck on your upcoming show.
Thank you.
And as regular listeners know, this is the point in the show where we chit-chat about Mary's training tip. So what is your training tip this month and what inspired it?
So I typed in the notes that it was don't be afraid to train, but then as I was thinking about it, it's actually don't be afraid to make mistakes. And this was inspired by, so I have a new puppy that I'm working with. She's my little Belgian Malinois, Ember. And she's my second Belgian Malinois. And with Echo, who passed away in the spring, I did a lot of work on training her because they're a very high energy, intense breed. And they pretty much require at least basic training so that they don't destroy your house and everything inside. So when I got Echo, I had to actually not set out to get a Belgian Malinois. Long story, but she just kind of fell into my lap, the opportunity to have her. So I didn't have a whole bunch of time to really think it over, research. I agreed to go look at her, and then I did a bunch of last minute research on Belgian Malinois. And everything I read was a lot of people saying, so much dog. And I found myself going, oh my gosh, what the heck am I doing? But it ended up wonderful. She was like my soulmate dog, the most wonderful dog in my life. Because I had that initial, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I was really on top of her training. I took her to classes to do obedience training, and I invested in a couple of online programs to do training, and trained up pretty dang well, I must say, for someone who is not an expert dog trainer. But when I got this new puppy, I found out very quickly, because this is my second time to like really hardcore focus on that foundation training, I found out I didn't remember half the stuff I did with Echo. I was like, wait, how did I train her to do this again? And it's funny. And I'm sure horses are the same way if you're not in practice all the time.
Well, that makes sense. You're right. Yeah.
You kind of forget. I reinvested in some more training programs for the new pup because I wanted to be even more structured. I'm not going to do any sport work with her, but I still wanted like that really cool competition heel that you see. Like if you Google any Belgian Malinois video, you'll see people doing it where the dogs are just like really focused and have a good heel and all of that stuff. So these are some new programs, new territory that I'm delving into. And I'm trying to diligently watch them and learn at the same time as training the new puppy. And I found myself being overly cautious because I would watch the video and I get the puppy out. And then I realized that I'd forgotten everything in the video. And I'd be like, oh, I can't do this today because I need to watch the video again. Or anytime things wouldn't go exactly according to plan, I would just feel like paralyzed, like, oh no, I didn't do this right. I better stop doing it. Or, oh man, I know I'm supposed to only give the cue once and here I've said it three times and I'm going to wreck her and da, 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 da. And so I found myself very quickly just being very stifled and afraid to train. As I was training, because I'm like, I'm going to do it wrong. I'm doing it wrong. And this isn't how I'm supposed to do it. This isn't how it went in the video that I watched. And finally, one day I'm like, no one's watching you right now and your puppy will forgive you. And if you're not absolutely perfect. So I just pushed through and kept going, realizing, yes, I made the mistake. I was supposed to say this cue, but I said that cue instead, or I was only supposed to say the cue once and then get the puppy to do it. And I didn't, and I had to say the cue three or four times. And I found myself thinking, well, so what? Like, I'll make a mistake and then it'll be okay. And I'll have to fix the mistake, but that's fine. And I've been so familiar with horse training for so long that I don't have that same fear. I don't have the fear of improvising and making a mistake and realizing, ah, this didn't go perfectly, but I can redo it. I can fix my mistakes. So I just found myself pushing, being okay to be out of my comfort zone, being okay to make a couple mistakes that if a real dog trainer was watching, they would kind of actually me, like, actually, it's supposed to be like this. And I'm like, no one's here. No one's here to watch. And most dog trainers are like most horse trainers in that they get that people are learning and it's going to be okay. So that's the gist of the training tip. When you're out there and you're in the field trying out your new practices, it's okay if you make some mistakes. The most important things are that you're safe, that your horse is safe, that you're trying to be as fair and clear and consistent as you can with the horse. Horses are very forgiving. If you make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. There are not too many dire, big mistakes that you really want to avoid making. For the most part, the errors that we make are a slight mechanical error. You know, I didn't give the cue exactly right, or I didn't ask for this in the way that I should have, or I should have kept asking until I got this result instead. It's okay because over time, it's more important that you practice and gain consistency. And the more consistent you are and the more practice you put into it, you'll erase all of those times you didn't do it quite right. It's better that you just dig in there and do it and be consistent than being afraid to try.
Yeah. I try to remind myself is the one mistake I should not make is making the same mistake over and over.
Yeah.
When you foul something up or you feel like things are not going properly, which usually means you fouled something up. It's like, it's not going the way it should be going. You take that opportunity to learn what you need to change or what you need to do differently so that you don't keep making the same mistake. What I used to see when I taught riding lessons a lot, they were what I called my difficult students. The people who just want to ride, they don't really want to learn how to ride. They just want to ride. They would make the same mistake over and over and over. And it was the struggle for me to try and enlighten them and understand why it's important that you don't keep making that same mistake. There are consequences. And frequently those consequences are way down the line. And then it's a little too late because you've ingrained that mistake and that mistake becomes part of what the horse perceives as the correct answer. So not being afraid to make a mistake intuitively says to me, not being afraid to learn more and go, do I really know as much as I thought I did?
Yes.
I'm living a little bit of that right now, which is why it's at the four.
Oh, yeah. And I've been there too. So if you make the mistake and it's still not going well, you're not able to get it fixed, the results are kind of, you're getting the same wrong results every time. That's when you're going to say, okay, stick a pin in it, pause. I need to pull up that training video again, or maybe I try a different method, or maybe I call my expert friend down the road, or I go hire my local trainer and get a lesson and get another pair of eyes on me. And, you know, that's when you're going to want to really go back to the drawing board and rework it and, you know, get some more knowledge. So there's certainly that aspect of it too. I think a lot of us, especially women, tend to be more on the timid side, like I was with my puppy, like, oh, I didn't do this right. I didn't do this right. So I just might as well not do it at all. But yeah, there's definitely both ends of the spectrum. If you're just still not getting the results and you're trying it over and over and over again, before you really ingrain that into your horse, definitely get some intervention, either, you know, some more education or an expert to help you out.
Perfect. Dun, dun, dun. And speaking of intervention, I sat down a few weeks back with some of the good folks at Kent Horse Feeds, and we had a chat about the role that nutrition plays in prepping your horses for the show season and keeping them looking good all the way through the show season. So let's tune into that right now. And I'm so happy to welcome to the show Kristen Sturken and Chris Arnston, and they are here compliments of the folks at Sentinel Feed. We're going to chat a little bit about considerations for horses that are coming up into the show season and keeping them at their best, at their peak during show season, and how Sentinel's extruded feeds can help them do that. Welcome to the show, Chris and Kristen.
Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Chris, I'm going to start with you. You show and compete with halter horses at a very high level. So halter, I think, is the discipline that has the most crucial first impression. The judge is looking at the horse right there in front of him, very close up. How do you think that nutrition plays an important role in creating that wow factor first impression?
I think nutrition is one of the most important things. I think nutrition keeps the wow factor by making a tighter muscle, a pretty top line. It'll put weight up over the back. The coat condition's obviously important. We want them to be shiny and healthy hair, not dull. I think that nutrition also with the Sentinel Safe Start has the low starch, the low sugar diet that keeps the growing foals, the younger stock, the weanlings and the yearlings. It keeps the epiphysitis away from their joints. but it's something that's got to be monitored daily, obviously. But it's that overall look, the look of the eagle, the wow factor, whatever you want to call it, nutrition plays a huge part in, for sure.
So long show seasons. It seems like the show season gets longer and longer every year. Do you find that the Sentinel extruded feeds are useful for helping keep your horse at peak for the entire season?
Yes. And depending on the horse, we don't keep all of them at peak level all year long. Like if we're showing them in May and we're not going to show them again till November, we'll back them down, take a little weight off them, let them have a little more fresh look when they come back, and then 60 or 90 days before the next big show, kind of fill them up and get them a little fuller and increase the intake basically to them.
So I talked about extruded feeds. Kristen, can you tell me what an extruded feed is and why it makes a difference?
Sure. So if we extruded feed is a cooked feed. It's pressure cooked with high temperature, steam, moisture added. The pressure is key during that cooking process. If we compared it to a pellet, it's also a form of a cooking process, but not as high in temperature, not the pressure degree that we have with extruded. So a little bit different cooking process. And if you look at a pellet versus an extruded nugget, you see a pretty big difference. A pellet is much smaller in diameter. It's very dense if you broke open a pellet compared to an extruded nugget, is what we call them. It's very light and airy. If you break open an extruded nugget, it's very porous, and that's what makes it super easy to chew for the horse. It also makes it very easy to break down for the horse. So as far as eating, they eat it a little bit slower, which is healthier. It breaks down easier, which helps decrease the risk of choke or other digestive upset. The cooking helps to increase the digestibility of that product and increase the nutrient utilization. The bottom line is the horse just gets more out of that feed. And typically we see most horses eat a little bit less of an extruded feed compared to a pellet or even a textured feed. So it's all related to that cooking process. It also helps make sure the nutrients like protein and starch get digested where they're meant to be digested, in the foregut before they reach the hindgut. And that's healthier for the horse. So, quite a few differences and quite a few benefits to an extruded feed.
So, Chris, you mentioned safe start feed from Sentinel. When you're feeding up and prepping young horses, weanlings, foals for competition, how does safe start play a role in that? And what is your forage of choice and how does that fit into the program?
We feed alfalfa, straight alfalfa, with this Sentinel safe start. On the weanlings, we feed a lot more grain than we do alfalfa. And then as they get older in life, it kind of tilts the other way, where you'll get a little more alfalfa and a little less Sentinel safe start as they get to be 3, 4, 5 years old, that sort of thing. But I think the Sentinel safe start for the growing babies is, the best feed out there. There's no doubt about it. With the low on starch, low on sugar, they utilize the feed, as Kristen said. I think the hind gut in our halter horses is the thing that, when it's not right and not processing the food right, we don't have that healthy hair. We don't have a happy horse. We don't have that wow factor look. And with the Sentinel Safe Start, we have basically zero hind gut issues.
Now, as far as the mare is concerned, because you're fitting up these youngsters to become show horses, does Safe Start play a role for the mare's nutrition?
Absolutely. We feed all of our mares the final 3 months. The majority of them get a year round, but the final 3 months is the main 3 months to get the Sentinel Safe Start in them, to make that baby, when it's growing, have as much nutrition for a, the health of that foal inside. And then we definitely feed it to the mare after she foals, to where that baby, when it first starts eating, can get that same feed in it. And it's used to that feed, to where when we wean, the baby just goes right on. Some people have said, well, we feed oats at home, and I'll just send the baby to you, and you can start it on the Sentinel Safe Start. But that, you know, that there's such a texture difference. Sometimes it takes them a week or 10 days to kind of get used to that from a pellet or an oats or something like that compared to the Sentinel Safe Start. So I tell all my customers, when the baby's born, you know, keep the Sentinel Safe Start in front of the mare, let the baby eat that. And then when they bring them to my facility, if they're not born here, I mean, they're already on it, and they take off, and it just works.
That makes sense that you don't lose any condition during that transition. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you're already stressing them, weaning them, moving them to a new place, and then you switch feed and you're just asking for problems. So it's much easier if they're on that all the way through.
So, Kristen, one final question for you. At what point during the mare's pregnancy does it become really critical that they've got a good quality feed and the appropriate quantity of it, like Safe Start from Sentinel?
Yeah, we really stress to the horse owners or breeders that it's really that last 3 to 4 months. I mean, they need to be in good health and get good nutrition throughout pregnancy, but that the last 3 to 4 months are when that unborn foal growing fast, they're growing a lot, and we really need that mare healthy and passing those nutrients on to that foal for proper growth. And we also, you know, we want to make sure that mare goes into foaling in good body condition, not too thin. Because once she starts lactating and that foal is nursing, those are some of the largest energy or calorie needs that a horse can have. So we don't want them to, you know, lose or lack body condition going into lactation. So those last three few months and then into lactation is then critical for the mare as well as the foal. But we want to keep that mare healthy too in lactation.
I think that's very easy for folks to underestimate the amount of energy required for a mare nursing a foal. And that's when you get behind the eight ball. You're everything's going great. Mare foals, and somehow or another, 17, 18 days later, she's lost a massive amount of weight because you weren't prepared to meet those caloric needs. So that makes perfect sense. Those last 3 months really keep things up to snuff as far as her caloric intake and the quality of the calories that she's taking in. So thank you very much, Kristen and Chris, for stopping by the show. You can find all sorts of great information about Sentinel's extruded feeds at feedsentinel.com/trusted. And I will also put that link in the show notes page. And you guys, thanks again for stopping by the show. So next is listener questions. What are we going to start with?
Okay, let's start. I'm just going to go right in order here. I found a lot of these questions have a very similar theme, which as they do, I think most of you guys are working with spooky horses this week. And even though you have different specific spooky horse problems, I think it's going to be a lot of the same advice. Let's start with Courtney. So she says, what are some of your favorite ways to bring a spooky horse back into work after a long break? I've not ridden throughout my pregnancy because I love my horse, but I also respect her unpredictability. Very smart. I've also been pretty sick, so haven't been doing groundwork either, but want to focus this fall and winter on some groundwork and light riding to build her back up. She has not yet consented to this idea. She will no longer be a pasture puff. I imagine she will be less than thrilled. I can definitely relate to the horse on that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would also like to be a pasture puff. So, yeah, very smart bringing her back into work slowly and doing the groundwork, and mentioned that this is a spooky, more reactive horse. So I think it's great that you're going into groundwork. If you don't already have a tried and true groundwork protocol, that's something I would look into first. Find a program that you really like, that you really trust. There's a lot of great ones out there. And, you know, something that has a good foundation so that you have some idea of where you're going to start and how you're going to progress. All of that said, most groundwork programs really focus on two things, and that is getting the horse's feet to move in certain situations and teaching the horse to relax in certain situations. So you have sensitizing exercises where you're working on that body control. You have desensitizing exercises where you're getting the horse used to spooky things and things that are going to be in their life, and you want to teach them not to be so reactive. So when I do these groundwork protocols, I typically tend to shuffle through sensitizing exercises, desensitizing exercises. So I like to start my groundwork session with a desensitized exercise typically, because I don't want my horse to think when I throw the halter on him, we're just going to go to work really fast. We're just going to immediately start lunging circles or running around the round pen, especially if you have a reactive horse, because they'll get in that habit of just being, you know, moving all the time as soon as you start your groundwork. With a reactive horse, I want to start from a place of calm relaxation. So I like to do things like, if I've never thrown, I use a long lead rope, so I'll throw the lead rope all around that horse, or, you know, I'll pet them all over. I'll do something maybe slightly unfamiliar, but not so unfamiliar that they're going to start out their lesson being terribly afraid. Once we've gotten that done and my horse is in a place of listening and relaxation, and they've, you know, they've learned a, you know, a nice desensitizing lesson, then I sensitize my horse for a little bit. And I like to usually pick one body part to work on. So maybe today it'll be the hindquarters, and we're going to really work on loosening that hind end and getting that horse to step the hind end away off of minimal pressure. And I'll work on that exercise for a little bit until it's where I want it. And then instead of just moving for the rest of the lesson, I usually move a body part, get it pretty good, and then I go back to desensitizing. Again, we're dealing with a spooky horse here. So even though this works, this is how I do it for every horse, this is especially important for spooky horses because they tend to be more reactive and more sensitive and want to move more. So anytime I bring the energy up and I move that horse's body, I want to come back and bring it down again and say, okay, we just did that. Now let's stand still and let's just relax and let's enjoy this little break that we're having together. And I'll just do that, you know, over and over and over again. I'll desensitize them for a little bit, and then sensitize them for a little bit, and then desensitize them for a little bit, and then sensitize them for a little bit. Now, no matter what groundwork program you're doing, maybe you're a really big fan of John Lyons or Pat Pirelli, or I know on the English side, there's like the TNT method. A lot of them are different iterations of the same ideas. So no matter which one of those you're doing, the one thing that is I found is a very strong thread throughout all of my training that I think is extremely important, no matter what method you're using, is I want to teach the horse where home is. And I've talked about this before. And what I mean by home, I want to teach my horse that if anything happens unexpectedly, say I'm at a horse show and someone gets dumped off their horse and the horse is running crazy around the warm-up pen, or a plastic bag floats by, or there's cattle in the pasture that just got turned out. Anytime anything unexpected happens, I'm not going to always be able to prevent my horse from being frightened, but I can help them manage what happens after. So I teach my horse from the beginning, the answer is, if you don't know what to do, it's to look to me. So I do a lot of exercises where I teach the horse to focus their attention on me. If they have to move their feet, fine, but I want to keep their eyes on me at all times. And what this does is it helps the horse recenter and stay with me. So if a horse is putting their focus and their attention on me, they're putting their eyes on me, it's very easy for me to keep control of the situation. A horse that's looking at me, he might be running sideways, I can keep a hold of him. He might be running backwards, I can keep a hold of him and keep control of the situation. And every time that horse puts their focus on me during the lesson, I want to do some sort of release of pressure and just let that horse feel all the relief that comes with putting their focus on me. So what that can look like is, let's say I'm working my horse out in the cold pasture one morning and someone does turn the cows out in the pasture, you know, next door. My horse will probably take their focus off of me for a minute and go, oh my gosh, there are cows. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? When that happens, I'm going to use my lead rope. I'm going to use my body language. I'm going to tip that horse's nose toward me and say, nope, look at me, look at me, look at me. You may need to move your feet. That's okay. I'll move with you. But you need to keep your eyes on me during this whole scenario. Don't worry about the cows. I'm not worried about the cows. Focus on me and I'm going to help you out. And every time they put their focus back on me, even for a second, I'm going to relax my body language. I'm going to loosen that lead rope and I'm going to take a deep breath and let them know, yes, this is where you need to be. And this is going to take a lot of practice. And it's probably, you're going to have to probably repeat it many, many, many times. But what's going to happen over time, and I notice this the most strongly with the Mustangs I work with, in the beginning, anytime something scary happens, I'm really going to have to control that situation and get that horse to focus on me, focus on me again, focus on me again, focus on me again. But after a while, the cool change that I start to see is something unexpected will happen. The horse will tense up and go, oh my gosh, something is scary. And then they'll look at me like, what do I do? If I can get that to start happening more and more without me having to manage it so much, then I have a horse that's learning there's a place that I can go to feel safe, and it's the person at the other end of the rope. When that happens, I'm able to prevent a lot of the scary things that can happen that get us in trouble. You know, the running off, the spooking, the rearing, the bolting, all of that kind of stuff.
Dun, da, da. Whole other discussion, maybe we'll do this next month, is transferring that skill set to the human being in the saddle. Let's do that next month. Because that right there is a whole discussion,
that's
right?
That's a whole thing. Yeah.
That's a whole thing. Cool. What a great question. Thank you, Courtney.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
What have we got next? Yeah.
Okay. So we have, in the same thread, we're going to keep on the same theme. This one's from Lisa. She says, I have a 3-year-old off the track thoroughbred gelding, about 3 months off the track, currently worked 1 to 2 times a week, who's super quiet 90% of the time. However, he seems to have a fear of other horses jumping. He's not jumping yet himself. He's only 3. He will go from completely relaxed to extreme kite on a string, levitating off the ground with all 4s, rearing, kicking out, and attempting to gallop off. These episodes last about 2 to 5 minutes, and then he goes back to work. So far, he's mostly showing this on the ground with only 1 minor episode under saddle. I even took him to a jumping clinic. We did trot poles and tiny cross rails, and he was absolutely fine there with no issues. It was also his first time in an indoor arena. I do groundwork with him and work on moving the shoulders, moving the hind end, moving out and around me. He gets it, does it really well, but that seems to go out the window when he has an episode. What other things would you suggest could be done? It's such an extreme spontaneous reaction. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little worried if he goes off under saddle like he does on the ground. He's very athletic and I might not stick it. Very valid concerns. And I noticed that, I don't know why, but I think maybe because of the athleticism, some of those high-powered English breeds tend to want to be a kite as their very first reaction to any minor inconvenience, which when you're on the ground watching that, yeah, I totally get it, where you're like, I'm not riding that. There's no way.
Yeah, the kite things. Yeah.
Yes. And warm bloods, especially, I think it's because they're so easily athletic that it's no big deal for them to like levitate right off the ground 8 feet in the air.
It takes no extra effort to get all 4 feet off the ground and do a 360. That's okay, easy.
You are being too much. Knock it off. Whereas Remy, he has to be really scared if he's going to levitate. It's happened. But it has to be like a cannon going off because he's not going to spend those extra calories to do that. So it sounds like you have a good start on getting the groundwork going and the, you know, moving the feet and everything. But, you know, all flies out the window as soon as the situation gets a little heightened.
What you call your fire drills, would that type of work be useful here where you almost set up a situation where you anticipate he might have one of these so that you can have more control over the situation? Would that be useful, or was that not a good idea?
That would be incredibly useful. So when I'm working horses and we're in the quiet round pen and we're all by ourselves and there's likely not going to be anything too spooky, when I'm teaching new things, I do it very slow, very methodical. I give the horse time to think. I do lots of rewards often because the horse has no idea what we're doing and I need to teach them. So especially with Mustangs, my first lessons are very quiet and I keep the environment very controlled. I have an enclosed big square pen where, you know, just not a lot of stuff is going to happen. So in those cases, I can keep everything very low energy, you know, very quiet. We're teaching those foundation lessons. I do enough repetitions that the horse seems to understand what each lesson is I'm trying to teach them. However, I know at some point I'm going to have to take the horse out of the nice, safe, quiet pen, and they're going to have to face life. I've worked at facilities before where I had to take an unhaltered horse. I had to halter them for the first time in the round pen. And then I had to walk them across a busy parking lot to get them to their stall. So I know, you know, going from this nice, safe place to this big, open, wide place where lots of stuff is going on, I know something's going to probably spook my horse for going from point A to point B. So before I put the horse in the scary position, I will do what I call fire drills. So I will do the same exercises I've been doing. Let's say I've been working on moving the shoulders and having the horse go around me and, you know, doing like a little circle exercise. I'm probably going to do a couple of drills where I accidentally on purpose use too much pressure. And this is where I tend to look like a crazy person. This involves maybe when I send the horse out, I make a big scary noise with my mouth, or I jump up and down a little bit as I do it to where the horse is like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? And I don't want to do it so much that I'm putting the horse into that extreme fear zone, but I want to use enough kind of big energy to where I know the horse is going to be like unsettled and go, what the heck was that? Because what's going to likely happen is the nice quiet lessons I taught them is going to fall right out of their brain. And they're going to have a big reaction and they're going to probably hit the end of that lead rope. And they're probably going to try to problem solve on their own doing what's familiar to them, which is spooking and reacting and maybe trying to pull away. So what happens in that situation, I'm not going to punish them because they're just having a natural reaction. But I am going to keep their focus on me at all times. So I usually do that by directing their nose. I tip their nose toward me. As soon as they put their eyes on me, I'm going to give the lead rope a little bit of a release. And I'm going to keep doing that until I have all their focus back on me. So this usually results in them yielding their hindquarters and facing me. And they're standing still for a moment. Every time I get a moment like that, I release rope, as in I just put some slack in the lead rope. I become really relaxed and I'm going to let them have a moment to just breathe and process what just happened. They might go right back to spooking again. If they do, same thing. I just tip their nose toward me and then release when they put their focus back on me. And every time that happens and they realize that, okay, something scary happened, I tried to move away from the scary thing. I tried to just take matters in my own hands and be reactive. But when I put my focus back on my person, I felt relief. They're going to look to that more and more and more. I cannot prevent my horse from being scared. I can't prevent them 100% from moving their feet in a moment of reactivity. I mean, they're a prey animal. That's what they do. But I can start teaching them to search out where the relief is going to be. You're not going to find the relief by dumping your rider and running off. You're not going to find your relief by screaming for other horses in the pasture or trying to run off to the barn or anything like that. Where you're going to find help is with your person. And if they can look at me anytime there's something scary, then not only can I keep hold of the situation and keep control when things do get scary, but the scary things are going to happen less and less. So when you're out with your horse in the arena and other horses are jumping, I am going to treat my horse like nothing's going to happen and they're going to be totally fine and I'm going to put them through their paces. But as soon as the horse in the background hits that jump and my horse goes, oh my gosh, the two things I'm going to focus on is keeping a healthy distance between me and a horse. Because when they go airborne, sometimes they go airborne at you and we don't want to be collateral damage. So I'm going to do whatever I can to keep a distance between me and the horse. And that might involve like shaking my lead rope at him to say, hey, do that away from me. I might have to raise my arms or wave my flag up and down, whatever I can to say, hey, do that over there, not on top of me. And then the other most important thing is also keep your eyes on me. I want two eyes on me through the whole spook. So they're going to do their spook. At that point, I'm just keeping control of the situation. Again, keep those two things in your head. Healthy distance from the horse. Keep their eyes on you. As soon as they find that spot where, okay, they've come back down to earth, their eyes are on me, I'm going to relax. And so I loosen that lead rope and I get really still. And the horse that's terribly reactive might go back into the spook again. If they do that, again, keep a healthy distance from me, put your eyes on me. This is something I do almost every clinic because a lot of horses haven't been away from home, or maybe you've never been away from home and we're in the arena with several other strange horses and sights going on. So a lot of horses are just losing their mind. And I know that at home they've been perfect little angels, but they come to the clinic and they're all like, oh my gosh, pandemonium, anarchy. So a lot of times before I can even do the cool lessons that I'm wanting to do, I just take, and a long lead rope helps with this. I just take a hold of the horse and I say, hey, okay, I know that you know a lot of cool stuff at home, but right now we can't even get that done. We're just going to work on focus and keeping a safe distance from me. And I might sit there for 5-10 minutes, just reminding the horse, stay away from me, but put your eyes on me. Stay away from me, but put your eyes on me. And every time they do it, I'm going to release. They might hold still for like 2 seconds and then go back to being airborne again. So I go back to managing the situation. Okay, yes, I know you're in the air. That's lovely, but just make sure you do it far enough away from me that I don't get hurt and you keep your eyes on me. And what happens almost every time I do that is when the horse finally comes to back down to earth and we get through the spook, we get through the situation, they let out a big deep breath and they lick and chew and lick and chew and lick and chew. And it's just slowly ingraining in their brain. This is where home is. This is where you are safe. So in the situation when you're out there and your horse has an episode, I'm not going to be able to completely prevent the episode. Manage the spook, eyes on me, safe distance away. When they come back down to earth, relax. Let them have a moment because they need to know where the relief is. And then try again. Say, okay, I was asking you to go around a circle. Can you try that again? And I'll ask real gently. And let's say they take a step and go, no, I must be airborne. Manage the situation, get their eyes back on you, make sure they're safe distance away, release when they're back down to earth, and then say, okay, I would like to try that again. And my energy throughout all of this, I will step in as firmly as I need to. I will manage the situation with the skill of a ninja, because I've done this many times. But other than that, I kind of have this nonchalant, I'll look at him, I'm like, are you done? All right, let's try it again. And I do everything very easy with my body language. I'm like, take your time, go back on that circle. Let's say this time they take 3 or 4 steps. And if they're walking on that circle nice and calm, I'm loosely drope, I'm chill, I pretend like I've never seen them spook in my life and they're going to be perfect. Let's say they go 3 or 4, even 5 steps, and then they go, no, I have to run off, I have to go airborne. Okay, tip your nose toward me, look at me, and relax. And I'm going to have to manage those panic attacks over and over and over again. The best place you can do this, if you can maybe be where your horse can see horses jumping in the background, but you're far enough away that they're just not completely out of their mind about it. I do this with my horses at shows and everything. Instead of trying to take my horse right into the scary situation and say, you know, put your nose on the scary sign and deal with it, I just let the scary things happen in the background. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's nice. That horse just bucked its person off. But, you know, look at me, because that's what you should be focusing on. And let's try again.
And ooh, I have a question for you, because this is going to be quiz Mary day for me. When you have a horse who, because the background is, again, that whole fire drill concept. Let's take small steps towards the thing that sends you over the edge. When you have a horse that, when they do spot something that they find alarming in capital letters, and their solution to the problem is to get really, really, really close to it so they can see what it really is. For example, it's 15 acres away. They see 6 cows in a field. Those 6 cows have them have 100% of their attention. Where do you go with that? Because I've experienced that a number of times with James, who has had a very limited life experience now at 4 years of age. He went from living in a field with his family group to living alone with his little brother, and that was it, you know, and he had really no stimulation besides an empty field and his little brother. There was nothing there to scare them, so they got used to nothing. So how do you deal with that? I need to see what that is over there. It's not going to get less scary unless I go see it, when in fact, actually what happens is it gets more scary. But yet they want to go towards it, and even though it's more scary. I feel like it's like, this is contradictory. You're terrified of it, but you want to get closer.
Yes. So, and that is the horse saying, I need to see whether I have to run. I need to make sure, because even though they have an abundance of energy, they still don't want to waste it. So, and I've seen this before. When I see this in nature without the rider, what ends up happening is, I saw this once with a group of horses, and a bobcat just in the middle of the day just came walking across the pasture. So all the horses' heads shot up, and they look dead at this bobcat, and they're like, what the crap is that? And all of them immediately start walking toward the bobcat. And I'm like, wow, those are brave horses. But then the next thing that happens almost always is the horse marches toward the bobcat a couple of steps, and then they go, pandemonium, run, everybody run for your lives. So that can happen with you on the horse. So
you're just describing my day. You've just described my day. Just insert cow for bobcat. Yes.
Watch your horses in the pasture. And if something, you know, a dog comes running across the pasture, head up, focus on the dog, and then pandemonium.
Run away from the dog!
Yes. So imagine you're on them, and let's say there's a scare, and I see everyone makes this mistake at horse shows. It drives me crazy, especially with Mustangs. A lot of times these Mustangs haven't been off the ranch too much by the time we get to the competition, because we've only had a few months with them. And we go to the show, and there's sponsor signs on the arena, and everyone wants to beeline their horse at the sign and be, look at this sign. That's not going to make your horse chill, because it's going to be the same thing. They're going to look at the scary thing. They're going to look at the cow. They're going to look at the scary sign. They may be brave enough to walk toward it, but then they're going to snort and run off.
Yep.
And now you've gotten your horse to have a big reaction in an arena that he's going to remember in the next few minutes when you have to show in that same arena. So what I do not demand that my horse ignores the scary thing. So let's say I'm riding in the pasture and across the fence, there's cattle. And my horse is like, oh my gosh, cows. I have to look at them. I don't completely try to rip his attention away from the cattle, but I do the opposite of what most people do. I say, oh yeah, cows, that's nice. But I was asked to do this lateral maneuver. Let's keep doing that. And maybe I have to take my horse away from the cows enough that he can get to listening to me again. It's more important that my horse listens to me instead of going and saying hi to the cows. There will come a time when I do want to say hi to the cows, but not when my horse feels tense and alert and I feel that his attention has gone off of me and it is 100% on cows. Because what's going through that horse's mind right now is not, what does my rider think about this? The horse is thinking in that moment, should I run for my life? Let me go investigate so I can decide if I'm going to freak out or not.
Yep.
I'm taking that off the horse's plate and I'm saying, hey, the person on you, I'm not looking at those cows. Why would you look at those cows? So I usually do something lateral if I feel the horse is getting a little too up. So I'm like, hey, why don't we work on like a figure eight at a trot for a second? Let's really get that beautiful inside bend and let's go on a circle to the right and a circle to the left. And what I will tend to do if I've decided that I really want to get my horse near those cows by the end of this, what I will do is I'm going to give my horse little drills to work on. Let's work on circles. Let's work on two tracking. And as I'm turning my horse in these circles or serpentines, semicircles, what have you, I'm going to just kind of keep turning my horse into the cow. So I'm going to turn kind of toward the cow and then maybe trot forward a few lines and then do a circle over on this side and then kind of turn my circle toward the cow again and then trot forward a little bit. And anytime my horse wants to peel his attention away from me and look at cows, I'm like, oh, no. Why don't you go back into a turn again? And I'm just doing this very loose, very easy. And my attention is also on the cows, but I'm going to pretend like, no, what we're doing is far too important to really focus on the cows. And what ends up happening is by doing that lateral work and giving your horse a job to focus on and releasing your horse, giving your horse lots of releases anytime he relaxes. So if I'm working on that circle and he's really tense to start in that circle because he's thinking cows, 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 cows. As soon as I feel my horse get into that bend again and they relax over their top line, I'm not going to throw the reins away, but I'm going to like open my hands and say, yes, that's where you need to be, where I'm asking you to be with my legs and with my aids, with my hands. And so after a while, you're going to feel them start to relax a little bit. You can then slowly start to work your way closer and closer to the cows. I never beeline it toward them. I'm just going to kind of go back and forth and sort of like you're cutting the cow back and forth and back and forth. And we'll get to a point where we've gotten pretty dang close to those cows. And I wait until my horse just feels really loose in their body and really relaxed. I get them as close as is reasonable. I'm not going to make him go all the way up to the fence if he doesn't feel okay. But when I feel that that horse has relaxed and those muscles feel nice and soft again, and he's really focused on me, then I'm going to say, hey, that was really good. Why don't we stand for a second? And oh man, there's cows over there. Fancy that. And I'm going to let him rest where the scary cows are. And let's say he tenses up again and he says, I don't want to rest. I want to move. I say, oh, well, since you want to move, I've got all these great lateral exercises we can work on. Same thing when I go to the arena and there's signs on the wall. I'm not going to beeline towards those signs. What I am going to do is my horse takes note of the signs. I take note of how scared my horse is of the signs. And I'm going to decide, okay, I don't think I can put my horse right on the rail right now. I think that's going to be too much for him. So I'm going to be 20, 30, 40 feet off the rail and work on what I'm working on, you know, and let's say I'm getting ready to go in a rail class. So I'm going to go, you know, in straight lines around that arena. And I'm telling my horse, don't focus on the sign. I've got something for you to work on. And I'm going to get them to a point where they feel softer and more relaxed. And what will naturally tend to happen is that small circle we had to start out in just to get his focus is going to naturally go bigger and bigger and bigger the more laps we take around the arena. And I'm not looking at the sign. The horse shouldn't look at the sign. I'm looking ahead of where I'm going. So if the sign is right to my right, I don't stop and look at it. I'm looking to the corner. I'm like, I want to drive the horse as deep into the corner of that far side of the arena as I can. As the horse relaxes, that circle is going to naturally get bigger and bigger and bigger until we're traveling on the rail again. Once we make our way back to the rail, if I can, if it's safe to do so in the warm-up pen, I'm going to stop my horse on that rail and I'm going to say, oh, this is the perfect place to take a little break. So that the more times I enter that warm-up pen, the horse is going to be like, I really like being on that rail. That's where we get a lot of breaks.
Yeah. So I think what I need to do, this has been very helpful. I need to take a 30,000 foot view. And I need to think, because these things are happening as I'm hacking about the neighborhood. We've gotten pretty comfortable here at the farm. So I need to think of when I'm hacking about the neighborhood, and it's this big, wide, it's four lanes wide total, but it's just a dirt road. It's just giant. I need to think of that as a long, skinny arena.
Yes.
So if he saw four cows in two arenas over that he just was terrified of, if I was in an arena, how would I deal with that? Because I got this trail ride mentality that, no, we're walking down the road or we're walking down a trail. No, there's plenty of room there. I can school. So as I'm going down my little dirt road here, and I know that those cows are four houses down, I need to start, okay, we're going to head out down the road, but we're not going to just walk down the road. We're going to do four circles, three serpentines, and two shoulder ins every 100 yards. Just as if I was in an arena situation, I need to reconfigure, you know, my point of view and where I'm at. And that's really going to be helpful. So helpful, Mary. Light bulb moment.
Yay. One thing I'd like to add in is it's absolutely okay to let your horse investigate things and to look at things and, you know, but I never do that when the horse is in a state of fear, because nothing's good is going to come out of that. I'm going to get their attention back on me, just like we did on the ground. And then when I feel that horse relaxed, I'll say, hey, do you want to go look at those cows now? And oftentimes that horse is going to go, oh, yeah, okay, let's go check out the cows now that I'm feeling better. And you won't have the big scary reaction. The other thing that's really important is we tend to follow our horse's lead on spooky situations, and it needs to be the other way around. We're the leader. So if my horse is spooking at the cows, I am not also going to put 100% of my attention on the cows. I'm looking ahead. What was I asking the horse to do when we spooked, or when he wanted to spook? I was telling him, go for it, because the horse is looking for help. And if we put all our attention on the cows, that is us telling the horse, I am also very concerned about those cows. So the horse is going to say, oh man, they must be very concerning. I think we should probably spook. But if the horse looks at me and I'm like, oh yeah, cows, whatever, let's keep going, they're going to go, okay, my herd leader is like pretty chill about this, so I think we'll be okay.
Notice those subtle cues of him becoming slightly more tense when he gets to that area versus the object itself, so that I can ride the horse, not the object he might be spooking at. Again, more light bulb stuff, Mary.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fake it till you make it. Like, I'm a big bundle of anxiety and nerves all the time. But when I'm working with my horses, I'm like, I'm cool. It's cool. Why are you being crazy? I don't understand. And kind of, you know, the analogy I would give is if I was babysitting a small child and we're home alone and the electricity goes out or something scary happens or it's storming out and that kid gets really scared. So I'm going to put on the brave face and be like, it's all right. You know, we'll find a flashlight. It's all good. No problem. Even if on the inside, I'm just a little bit terrified.
Yeah, there we go. Well, we have time for one more question right after we hear from our sponsor, Chewy. From early morning feedings to late night barn checks, horse care follows a rhythm, and Chewy helps you keep in step. Whether it's grooming for that shine, gear to protect every ride, or supplements to power their stride, Chewy delivers what you need when you need it. Fast shipping, flexible auto ship, and trusted brands mean you can focus on the feel of the reins, not the stress of the supply run. Your horse counts on you, and you can count on Chewy to match the beat of your barn life for every season and every reason. Start your order today at chewy.com/equine.
Okay, so final question. We're going to change direction here a little bit, and we're going to go with Margaret's question of, my sweet boy is so well trained. Every time I touch his foot, he lifts it up. I'm currently trying to put wraps on his sore leg, and he's constantly picking up his foot. How do I let him know it's okay to leave it down? Great question, and it goes to the foundation of what I do when I teach my horse to have their feet handled. So I like to teach my horse, there are times when I'm going to touch your leg, and that means just stand here and let things happen. There are times when I'm going to touch your leg, and that means please give me your foot to clean out or whatever. So I would approach your horse the same way I'd approach a horse that has never had his feet handled before. So I would use kind of both of my hands, and I would start rubbing the horse maybe from the elbow down, so like on the foreleg. And so I just kind of rub my horse both hands inside and outside of that leg. If my horse wants to move at that point, I just try to stay with him. I may have to just go back to one hand rubbing on the horse so the other hand can control the movement of the horse. And I'm going to keep my hand rubbing just gently up and down that horse's, the top of that horse's leg until they stop. When they stop, then I release. And so a horse that's terribly sensitive or maybe a little spooky, or a horse that's just so wonderfully obedient that they're like, oh, anytime you touch my leg, I'm just going to lift it. This is how I would solve that problem. So start from up high on the leg, rub, rub, rub until the horse stops, and then release. And once they can handle the top part of their leg, start working your way down to the knee, a little past the knee and the cannon bone. So if in this case with the horse, when he lifts his foot every time you touch it, I would just take both hands up and down that cannon bone and just gently rub up and down. And he's going to hold his leg in the air for only so long before he sets it down. As soon as he sets it down, I take my hands away and say, hey, that's what I want. So you're just reprogramming him, saying, when I got both hands on you like this and I'm just gently petting you, don't worry about it. Just go ahead and put your foot down, release. Do it over and over and over again until the horse is like, oh, we're playing a new game. Okay, I meant to just stand still. I think that'll probably be enough for this horse to learn the difference between this kind of leg handling means just stand, and this kind of leg handling means lift up the foot. But when I lift the feet, I have a different kind of hold I put on the horse that means, this means pick up your foot, and this, it means don't pick up your foot. So it's almost like a cue. So it could be a gentle pinch on their fetlock or their cannon bone. I like to just gently grab their chestnut and just give it a little bitty squeeze, so they know that when I squeeze that chestnut, or when I squeeze the fetlock, or when I squeeze the cannon bone, that means bend your leg, pick up your leg. But when I'm petting on you, when I'm, getting the wraps out and all of that, that means just hold your foot still. So you could even do this with, if you're doing like a standing wrap, you can even take the quilt thing. It just, the word fell out of my brain. But you could take that or your rolled up wrap and rub the wrap up and down the leg. And if the horse keeps picking up his foot, just keep rubbing that wrap up and down without trying to wrap the leg. Just rub it up and down, up and down, up and down until the horse puts their weight back on that leg and then release. It shouldn't take, I bet you could get this done easily in a few minutes. But as long as you just release when they're standing still and doing what you want, like everything else we teach the horse, it's all about the release. So when you release is what the horse learned. So if you're trying to wrap the horse's leg and you start wrapping and they pick up their foot and you take the wrap away, you're inadvertently teaching them to keep that foot in the air. But if you just stay in there with them until they put the foot back down, then take the wrap away, they'll go, oh, okay, I understand what we're doing now.
Dun-da-da! Easy peasy. Thank you very much, everybody, for submitting your questions. There's a couple in there we didn't get to. Mary will be back here again next month on the second Thursday, so we will get to some of those in addition to new questions. If you would like to be a person who submits questions to Mary's show, you need to be an HRN auditor and support the HRN hosts like Mary through our Patreon account. You can just go to Horse Radio Network, and on the right-hand side of the page, it has on there, become an HRN auditor. For folks who want to stalk you appropriately online, have you do a clinic, watch you at a horse show, etc., where can they find you online, Mary?
You can find me on Facebook, Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. That's probably the best place. There's also MaryKitzmiller.com where I have my email. And I don't know if you just heard my Chihuahua. She chimed in as well.
Yay! Good job, Chihuahua!
she is my partner today. I have Peso, and she likes to growl all the time. And that's how she expresses herself.
Aw. See, if she was a Disney character, she would be one of those Disney villains that everybody loves.
Yes. Very dramatic, but also very fabulous at the same time.
See, there you go. You can find links to today's show at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And don't forget, Mary has her own podcast feed. So if you want to listen to Mary's show and not all the rest of the Horses in the Morning shows, we forgive you. Just search for Mary Kitzmiller Training on your favorite podcast player. Glenn and Jamie will be back again tomorrow with more fun and hijinks. See you then.